The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Welcome to back to the Asmund and Budick Show once again. Final time this summer on Sports Talk 1240. Dan Budick alongside Jake Asmund, taking you from 9 to the 10 o'clock hour here on WGBB. Jake, good to be back on the air.
It certainly is, and it's been a lot of fun. It's now our third show on the WGBB airwaves hosting Sports Talk 1240, and obviously a whole lot to get to with Geno Smith's jaw being obviously one of the biggest stories in football and, of course, in New York football. It kind of makes everyone forget about the whole JPP situation, Dan, which we'll touch on in the second half of the show. And then both baseball teams, a lot of people thought this was going to be a down year for the both New York baseball teams, the Yankees and the Mets. Both teams are in first place. Both teams are in pennant races. And we're sitting here in mid-August already. So the baseball seasons have been tremendous for both teams. What the Mets did at the deadline last time we were on the show, they just added Uribe. They just added Kelly Johnson. We weren't sure if they were going to make any other moves. They bring in Cespedes, and everything has changed. They had a setback this weekend, but that's really where it begins. It starts with the baseball. We got two teams in first, and two teams in the middle of a pennant race. And the Yankees, they took care of business this weekend. I know they lost today, but they were able to get 2 out of 3 against the Blue Jays, against a team that had won 11 straight games coming into the series. And the Yankees on Friday night won a game that a lot of people didn't think they had a shot, trailing 3-0 in the eighth inning. And Beltran hits that pinch hit 3-run home run. Saturday, Tanaka does his thing. And today, you kind of throw as a bit of a wash. You know, they got outpitched. You know, Severino pitched very well, but unfortunately, Carlos Beltran didn't do him any favors. They couldn't touch this guy that the Blue Jays sent out there in Hutchinson. But at the end of the day, the Yankees took care of business. They got 2 out of 3, and you could say the Mets failed, but they didn't lose any ground because the Nationals, they got swept by the Giants this weekend as well. So as we sit here in mid-August heading into another week of baseball, both teams are in first place.
Both teams are in first place, and for the most part for the Mets this weekend, a tough couple of games. Really, the first two games of the series they could have taken, a couple of extra inning, pretty exciting games between the Giants and Pirates. But today, obviously, after the rain delay in the seventh inning, it really fell out from under them. They fall 8-1. And for the Yankees, Jake, I think you hit the nail right on the head. They really needed to come in this series and really play well, play better than they did last week. I mean, last weekend, they get swept by Toronto. They don't play well. And it looked like the ceiling was falling from under them. The floor was falling from under them, and they were going to, you know, fall off. You see lose a series against Cleveland. They come in this weekend. That first win was really big. I think the Beltran shot was huge. You talk about losing down 3-1, a team that has had trouble scoring runs, to get a huge three-run bomb by Beltran, pinch hit to give the Yankees a lead that they would hold. That really set the tone for the series, and they fall today, but they needed to take 2 out of 3 this series. I think it was a big series for them, considering that Toronto has been playing so well, coming in winning 11 straight games. Coming into the series, the Yankees able to snap that on Friday night and really make a chase of it. I mean, both teams are really deadlocked in their division race. Obviously, the Mets 4.5 games up on the Nationals, and the Yankees just a half game up on Toronto, but that's going to be a race that's going to come down. Both races are going to be races, I think, that are going to come down to the final week or two of the season.
Well, who knows with the Nationals at this point? Getting swept this weekend by the Giants, they're at 500 right now.
They're under 500.
They're a game under
58 and 59 right now.
They're a game under 500, as Dan just said. And listen, this is a team that everyone thought, all the experts out there thought this team was going to win 100 games, go right to the World Series, and win the World Series. And they have been awful, and I know they've had a ton of injuries, but for this team to be a game under 500 with arguably the MVP of the National League on its roster and arguably the National League Cy Young and Scherzer on its roster, it's unbelievable what we're witnessing. You have two of the best players in baseball on that team, and I know baseball is not about one singular player, but this team is so much better to be one game under 500, even with the injuries. And Matt Williams shows you how much being the manager of the year is really worth. He was the NL manager of the year last year. This year, he might be fired if this team continues to play this poorly.
And I think he deserves to maybe not lose his job yet. If we see it keep trending of this, where they fall 5, 6, 7 games back, which easily could have happened this weekend if the Mets would have been able to take a game or two from Pittsburgh, obviously not able to do that.
And the
that.
Nationals had a chance to make up
ground. Yeah, well, for the Nationals,
they couldn't win a game.
I think more so for the Nationals and the Mets, you're really upset after this weekend, because the Nationals had an opportunity to really dive into the Mets' lead because of the fact that the Mets got swept by Pittsburgh. They had a chance to really dig in and maybe cut this lead to 2, and even 1 if they were able to sweep San Francisco. But what does the Nationals do? They go into San Francisco and they get swept and they get beat pretty handedly in all three games. And listen, Matt Williams, manager of the year last year for the National League, you said it, Jake, but this season, I mean, he has not gotten anything out of these players. I don't think he's necessarily a great in-game manager. The injuries have killed them, but, I mean, the Mets are hit hard by injuries. I mean, there are a lot of every team suffers injuries, and I think for Washington this year, they just haven't been able to find that consistency. I mean, they're really, outside of a few weeks this season, they have really not played well all season. And I mean, this is not like it's
the Mets couldn't hit for 3 months. The Mets went without offense for 3 months, the biggest lead they built up was 3 games.
Well, and that just goes to show you that the Nationals never played well. Even when the Mets weren't playing well, the Nationals were never able to take advantage of it. And you can make the argument that going into July 31st, the Mets shouldn't have even been in this division.
No,
the division should have been over.
The Mets season should have been over, and the Mets wouldn't even be able to really win the wild card with the way that's shaping up with the teams in the Central that are competing for those spots. So the Mets, they've taken advantage of the fact that they are very fortunate to be in this division. The Nationals have been awful. Philadelphia is terrible. The Atlanta Braves and the Marlins aren't any good. So the Mets might walk away with this division easily if the Nationals continue to stink it up like they've been doing the past 5 games, losing 5 in a row. It really is unbelievable for a team that everyone said was going to win the World Series, a team that we thought had the best pitching in all of baseball. Strasburg has struggled. Fister's out of the rotation. You know, the Mets have caught a huge break, and they fully have taken advantage of it. I know they had the setback this week, but for the Met fan to be sitting here at 63-55 in first place, I know you're a big Met fan, Dan. You'd sign up for that in a heartbeat.
And Terry Collins said it today after the game that if you told him in May that middle of August they'd be 4.5 games up on Washington, you'd take that, obviously, and he would definitely take that, and the Mets are taking that. But, you know, this weekend they had an opportunity to maybe get a couple more games lead, but they didn't. They played a really good Pittsburgh team. And a couple of the games, the first couple of games of the series really could have gone either way. I mean, they were good games
what
today.
What concerns me with the Mets, though, Dan, the bullpen, other than Familia, other than Clippard, they have a lot of question marks, and they killed them in the series.
It hurt them. Well, Bobby Parnell
twice.
Hurt them. Well, Bobby Parnell hurt them twice, and Bobby Parnell,
he's got to stop pitching in these games.
Well,
Terry can't keep going.
Well, it's soon enough. Terry's not going to have a choice but not to go to him because he just hasn't performed. The guy hasn't performed well his last couple times out.
And I don't want to hear he's coming off Tommy.
Well,
John.
He is coming off
but
Tommy John.
But here's the thing: that's not a reason. That's not a reason to keep going to him.
Then he shouldn't go to him. That's a different story.
If he's not at 100% or he's coming off of Tommy John, you can't put him in the middle of the pennant race.
I don't think after today you'll see Bobby Parnell in a big spot for the Mets.
I certainly hope not. The rain delay really killed this Mets team today. They lose Matt Harvey. They go to the bullpen and Parnell implodes. That's why they lost today.
Yeah, that's why they lost. Parnell didn't pitch well, and they had no other options because they played 14 innings last night and had to use a lot of their bullpen last night. And the quick turnaround day game today, they really didn't have many other options in there. And unfortunately, Bobby Parnell just couldn't get the job done. And, you know, Bobby didn't pitch well today, but, you know, it wasn't helped that Ruben Tejada was late covering second base on a double play ball.
Oh, absolutely. That was not Parnell's fault. That throw was right over the second base
bag. Tejada was just late getting there. I don't know what it was. He's got to know with a right-handed hitter at the plate, he's the guy as a shortstop covering second base. And on a comebacker to the pitcher, he's got to be there. He's got to be quicker. That double play has to be turned. And you can make the argument if that's turned, we're talking about a different ball game. It never gets to 5-1 with two outs there. So a couple of things really misplayed Bobby Parnell, and it's unfortunate. But he definitely hasn't pitched well, and I think going forward you will not see him in at least for the next few times out, big pressure situations for the Mets.
He better not be. I mean, he's abominable.
Well,
he can't pitch in a big game.
He's been really bad of late, and I think what happened was, and it's tough to really get into the mind of Terry Collins, but what happened was is he comes off the DL from pitching Tommy John surgery, missed entire last season, and really missed a season before that because he had a shoulder injury. He had shoulder surgery and rehab from that, and then had to have Tommy John surgery. So really missed major parts of 2 seasons. But I think what happened was, Jake, is Parnell comes back and was really phenomenal in his first 7-8 outings. I mean, his ERA was .97 after like 6 or 7 inning pitch. Parnell was looking lights out. I didn't have the command, had the command, but didn't have the speed on his fastball, was not throwing 96, 97 anymore, was throwing 90, 91, and was getting guys out. Collins had a lot of faith in him, really went back to him a number of times, and it worked out, and he's worn him out because Parnell just hasn't pitched well of late, and I think Collins is soon going to realize, or soon that confidence in Parnell is not going to be there, and he's going to have to find another guy to go to in the 7th inning. Is it going to be Hansel Robles on a regular basis in the 7th inning? That's the big question mark, is how you patch the the game, at least to the eighth inning, who's going to be that sixth, seventh inning guy if your starters don't get that far? And unfortunately today, it wrinkled out that way because of the fact of the rain delay. I mean, Harvey would have been back out there, no questions asked, I think, in the seventh inning, even though Collins said he was tentative about it and wasn't sure if he was going to go back out there.
He was going back
out there. I think 100%. If there was no rain delay, there's no doubt that Matt Harvey's going out for the seventh.
They played back-to-back extra inning games. The bullpen's taxed. Of course he's going back out there, Terry.
Unfortunately, and I agree, of course, after the 45-minute rain delay, you can't put Matt Harvey back out there. You got to go to your bullpen.
No, of course not. And it's unfortunate what happened is it wasted yet another tremendous outing by Matt Harvey that he doesn't get a win. It's unbelievable how many times the guy pitches seven innings, one run, and is either the losing pitcher or doesn't get a decision in the game. And that happened yet again today. But let's open up the phone lines right now at 631-888-8811. We're talking baseball the first half hour of the program. We'll get to football in the second half. Let's go out to our first caller of the night, Jason. He's in Westchester. Jason, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up, Jason?
I have big problems as a Mets fan. You know, obviously they're 4.5 games up or 47 to play. But to me, obviously, guys, the lineup got better with the two trades. But to me, I'm still not that satisfied. I mean, Washington's too talented of a team to be losing the games that they are, and obviously Matt Williams has chemistry problems with Harper and Jason Worth. But to me, I'd still feel more confident about the Yankees winning their division than the Mets, and I think Toronto's a better team than the Nationals. But having said that, I don't have that much confidence in the Mets that I feel for sure they can overtake the Nationals.
Well, Jason, let me ask you something. Are the Nationals really that good? You said the Mets have a four-and-a-half game lead with 40-some-odd games to go. Are the Nationals really that good? I mean, I think the worst thing that the Nationals could have done, and I said it at the time, was trading for Jonathan Papelbon. I think he's a cancer in the clubhouse, and I think he's been a cancer in that bullpen, because they took a guy, Drew Storen, who had his struggles in the playoffs last season. I agree. Yes, he did. He was not very good when the Nationals needed him the most. But throughout this season so far, he was very good, and they took him right out of the closer's role, just like that, for Jonathan Papelbon, a guy coming from Philadelphia, hadn't played a meaningful game all season, closed a meaningful game, and would not be traded to a team unless he was the closer. That's what he demands, and they made the move, and I think it's been a cancer move. I think it's a cancer move for the clubhouse, and I think it's a cancer move for that bullpen. I hated the move when they made it.
Well, I don't even think it's that, but also the Nationals, they're 10-20 since the All-Star break now. That's not a team that we thought maybe in the second half would get healthy and put things together. Well, they haven't played well all year.
And Jason, Worth is back. You know, Zimmerman, for the most part, is back. You know, Bryce Harper is arguably the best player in the National League, and they're a game under 500. So how good is Washington really?
I think they're good enough, and to me, the problem isn't really how good is Washington. The problem is I don't think the Mets are great, and I do feel the Mets are susceptible to losing the lead. Forget about these last three games, and they lost to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's one of the best teams in the league. The NL Central is one of the best divisions. We know they're both wild cards, guys, and you'll probably agree with me they're going to come out of there. But to me, it's like you guys were mentioning, the Mets bullpen. I was at the game yesterday, and Joe Martin, you know, he blew the lead. And the night before that, it was Parnell today. But Tejada and Murphy have some stuff to figure out there on who's covering second. But to me, it's the Mets bullpen.
All right, listen, Jason.
With a guy like Cologne and with a guy like Nice, if those guys don't go eight innings, because it's safe to assume the other three guys are going to go eight innings, honestly, they're in trouble.
No, you're absolutely right, Jason. You make a good point. It was the point that Dan and I were just discussing. Other than Familia closing out the game and other than Clippard, I have a lot of concerns with this Mets bullpen. As great as their rotation is to win in the playoffs, if they win the division, you need to be able to have a strong bullpen, and that's why the Yankees are successful. We saw what the Royals did last year with their bullpen. The Mets rotation is one of the best in baseball. There's no denying that. But when you need a big out, and obviously the suspension to Mejia really kills this team. I know he wasn't going to be available for the postseason anyway, but he's just another reliever that they can count on. Right now, so many question marks with this Mets bullpen, and if that's the reason why they end up losing or don't win this division for whatever the reason, you know, that's going to be a very disappointing end to their year if it comes down to the fact that their bullpen's not pitching well when they have this rotation and what they did to improve the offense.
Go ahead to Syosik. Greg, what's up? It's Greg from Syosik. Greg, what's up?
Damn, what's going on?
What's up, Greg? What's on your mind?
Let me tell you, man, these Mets look good, but I'm a little I was a little worried with the, like with the sweep from the Pirates. You know, that's like the first time that they've actually faced like a playoff contention team in a while, and they just looked very sloppy like this whole weekend. What do you think about it?
Well, I agree with you. They did look sloppy, and but they did a few good things. I mean, the Conforto 2-run shot yesterday down 3-1 late in the game was a nice rip. Really brought the team up. I mean, they haven't been scoring runs this weekend, but they're facing a really good Pirates team, and the Pirates are really good. The first two games I think could have really gone either way. I mean, the Mets were a hit away from winning last night. They were a hit away from winning on Friday night. They just didn't get that hit. So they were in those games today. You know, they're after the rain delay, they really came out flat towards the last couple innings of that game. Does it concern me? I mean, I'm not necessarily concerned. Am I weary that this could lead to something serious? Yeah, I mean, of course. The Mets have to really take care of business against the bad teams that they play up on their schedule, whether it's Colorado and Philadelphia. They have to take advantage of that. Because otherwise, you know, you can't expect Washington to keep losing forever.
I mean, you know, Friday night you have that second and third no out. I mean, how do you let that go? I mean, I know, like, you know, Cespedes, like, for all the home runs and RBIs, he just strikes out so many times, I feel like.
Well, one thing about Yoenis Cespedes is he does strike out a lot, and his on-base percentage is not very high. So that tells you a guy that strikes out a decent amount of times that doesn't have a high on-base percentage, if he's not getting a hit, he's not getting on base.
He's a boomer bust player.
He's a boomer bust player to the point where he's not a guy that's really going to work the count. And I think when you have two outs and you're in a situation like that with him at the plate, you don't need a guy, but you prefer a guy at the plate that can work the count a little bit. And unfortunately, at least so far through Yoenis Cespedes' first 15 or 16 games as a New York Met, we haven't seen him really work the count that much to where you're comfortable with him in a two-out situation.
Well, that's kind of what he is as a player, and that's what you're getting when you trade for this guy. You brought him in
here. He's a bopper. He's a big bopper.
Home runs at Citi Field, and to be a guy that you can plug in that three-hole every single game, protect Lucas Duda when he comes back. I'm sure he'll be back on Tuesday, we're hearing, when they play Baltimore. But listen, if you're the Met fan, it comes back to this. The Nationals are so bad right now. They didn't take advantage of any of these losses that the Mets had this weekend.
Yeah.
The Mets are 4.5 games up. And listen, with that rotation that they have, I tweeted this earlier today, the Mets are never going to be able to go on a long losing streak when they can send out Matt Harvey and they can send out Syndergaard and they can send out DeGrom 3 out of the 5 days. And let's not discredit the other two starters in the rotation.
Cologne and Nice, they've been great, Greg.
Nice
looks great, yeah.
No, that's what the Mets have going for them, is that they're not going to really get into a long losing streak. Like Jake just said, they have a tremendous staff. But I think this was a weekend where the Mets could have gone out there and really made an authority and play a good series against Pittsburgh, maybe win 2 out of 3 and make a statement throughout the rest of the National League, but they weren't able to do it. But lucky enough for them, Greg, is that the Nationals didn't capitalize, and they shot themselves right in the foot because they could have made this a really close division again. I mean, they could have brought this back to a game and a half.
Yep. Would you say 1-5 the Mets have the best rotation, like, in the league?
I would say in the National League, the Mets hands down have the best rotation. I think when you're able to throw Harvey out there, who's got a 2.59 ERA, DeGrom with a 2.03 going into Tuesday night, and Syndergaard, who's got, what, a 3.01, and he's only 16 or 17 starts into his major league career.
He's
22 years old, and we've seen plenty of glimpses of what Noah Syndergaard could be. So I think, yeah, and not to mention Nice and Cologne, who, yeah, Cologne's been spotty, but his last time out was really good, and Nice's really last 6 or 7 outings have been really good.
And also, let's not forget, they're going to get Steven Matz back at some point. He's already starting to rehab. I saw he's going to pitch with the St. Lucie Mets. So, listen, at the end of the day, the Mets rotation is as good as any team in baseball. That's not the issue. The issue is, can they hit enough, and they certainly have improved their offense, and what we were just talking about, the bullpen. But, Greg, thank you so much for the phone call.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks again.
Of course.
Bye-bye.
Let's go out to Dimitri in Ithaca. Dimitri, what's going on?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you? What's on your mind?
I'm good. I just want to talk about the Mets bullpen woes.
Everyone wants to talk about the bullpen.
What's on your mind?
I don't know. I just the bullpen in general, if you think it's going to be sturdy for the playoffs, and, you know, just pretty much the strength of their bullpen.
Well, Dimitri, I think the question lies in that 6th, 7th inning. If your starter's not going to get you there, who's Terry Collins' go-to in a close game? It was Bobby Parnell, but I think after today and this weekend, that's going to have to change. I mean, Terry's going to have to go to someone else in those latter innings to try to seal a bridge, especially at home, when you talk about getting the ball to Clippert in the 8th and then Familia in the 9th in a tie game or with the lead. You need to find that guy who you can rely on. And, you know, today was a situation where you needed those 3 outs, get back up at the plate after the rain delay, and see if you could score some runs. But, you know, unfortunately for the Mets today, they were right out of the game after the 7th inning.
Yeah, that's true. you know, I just hope Tyler Clippard and the rest of the guys can really get it together because
the
pitcher has been phenomenal.
Well, Clippard, they brought in Clippard to be that eighth inning guy. They planned him to match him with Mejia. Obviously, Mejia's suspension, that changed that. But Clipper's been really good. I mean, he's been able to get big outs. He got a big strikeout of Andrew McCutchen on Friday night with runners in scoring position in the tie game. That was a huge strikeout. I think Clippard has been very good. And I think Familia, again, a couple of times after the All-Star break, his first three or four outings after the break, he was awful. He has found it. He shrugged that off, and he's pitched really well in his last eight outings. So at the back end of the bullpen isn't the problem. It's
the eighth and ninth inning, guys are fine.
Sixth, seventh inning. Who are you going to go to? Where's Terry going to find
that
guy?
Not Bobby Parnell.
And, you know, after this weekend, it's not going to be Bobby Parnell. I think you might see Carlos Torres get more important innings in the sixth or seventh inning. And I think Hansel Robles is going to be a guy that's going to get that seventh inning at least next time out or the couple of times out because he's a guy – you know, Dimitri can throw 96, 97 miles an hour and hits his location. So I think he's going to be a guy that Terry might look to in that seventh inning.
Sure, I agree, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Let's go, Mets.
Yeah, thank you, Dimitri. Always a pleasure.
Dimitri, thank you very much. We got another caller on the line right now. We're going to switch to football in the second half of the show, we promise. Let's go out to Evan in Long Island. Evan, what's going on?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Evan,
what's on your mind?
Everything's good. Long-time follower. Long-time listener.
Well,
Your first-time caller?
It's good to have you on the show.
First-time caller on this station, yes. I followed you all over the world.
Oh, it's great to have you on board. What's up?
Quick question. Need your opinion. Yankees playoffs, yes, no. Division, yes, no. Wild card, yes, no.
I think they win the division. I've said that since July I felt pretty confident about the Yankees winning the division, so I'm going to check off a yes to making the playoffs, obviously, and I think they win the division. I know the Blue Jays have gone on this run, but they're going to cool off eventually, and that was what I would tell everyone when they were winning 11 straight. You saw the Yankees take care of business this weekend. They're about a week and a half, 2 weeks away from getting back Pineda to go with. Severino has already proved that he's the real deal. We saw what Tanaka did this weekend. I think the Yankees' rotation can withstand the addition of David Price, can withstand Tulowitzki, who's only hitting about 200 since he became a Blue Jay. So he's not the reason why they've won 11 straight games, but that's besides the point. I think this Yankees team, with their bullpen, their rotation, and they're going to hit again. They're going home for 10 games right now. They'll hit at Yankee Stadium. They're good enough to win the division. They'll withstand the Blue Jays. I think the Yankees are going to win the American League East, and I think Toronto will get in the playoffs, so they'll be the wild card.
I agree. I think the Yankees are going to win the division, Evan. I think they're a better team than Toronto. I know Toronto's been really good of late coming into this series, 11 straight. The Yankees cooled them off, winning 2 out of 3. But I just think the Yankees are a better team. I think they're a deeper team when you talk about a back end of the bullpen, which is very, very important going down the stretch. I still think Toronto has their issues there. I know they added LaTroy Hawkins, and he's been around the league forever. But I still think the Yankees have the edge there. And as far as lineup, you know, obviously Toronto – you know, adding Tulowitzki is huge, but Jake just mentioned it. He's only hitting 200 since the trade, and it was only natural they were going to cool off. I still think the Yankees are going to win the division, but I think Toronto's going to get in. They're really good. Adding Price and Tulowitzki, I think, put them over the top as far as getting into the playoffs.
First of all, Hawkins, when he comes in, I put a smile on my face.
Well,
horrible.
Well, that's
horrible.
That's the thing. Is like they
the guy's pitched on every major league team ever. It's unbelievable.
Their bullpen was so bad, and they had so many issues. I mean, think about this. Think about Toronto's season. They've had 2 11 game winning streaks. Outside of that stretch, they're 10 games under 500. I mean, that's telling just of what this team is. And I think since the trade, obviously they've been phenomenal. But LaTroy Hawkins, LaTroy Hawkins.
He's been in the league since 1995.
He's not a guy that scares me coming in late innings. I just think the Yankees have the edge as far as bullpen is concerned. I still think Toronto's very good, but I think when it comes down to it, down the stretch, mid to late September, when these teams are battling neck and neck in the East, I think the Yankees have the edge in bullpen and starting rotation as well. I understand Price was added, but I just think as far as depth in the rotation,
Yankees
have the edge.
If Tanaka can match up with David Price, and I know David Price is – I would take him over Tanaka any day of the week, don't get me wrong. But if you have Tanaka matching up with Price, you're going to get Pineda back, and he's a legitimate number two in your rotation. You've seen what Severino could do. Evaldi's pitched much better the second half of the year. The Yankees' rotation is pretty good. CeCe's even been a lot better his past couple
Tanaka's
starts.
Tanaka's a legit number one.
He is, absolutely.
Let's put that in there.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think David Price might be a little better if we're really going to pick and choose here. But Masahiro Tanaka is a number one. Exactly, and the Yankees have had success against David Price. The Yankees have the rotation to compete with the Blue Jays. That's not their issue. The Blue Jays, do they have a better offense? Sure, they might have a little better offense. They're ranked first. The Yankees are second. So where's Toronto exactly significantly better than the Yankees?
They were hotter than the Yankees.
You just saw what happened this weekend. The Yankees took two out of three in a very hostile environment in Toronto.
Another thing is I think everyone was so shocked that the Toronto went into Yankee Stadium and swept the Yankees that everyone became such Toronto lovers over the last week. And everyone forgot about the Yankees were just coming off of July where they were the best team in baseball in July. I mean, people just forgot.
You know what everybody's not realizing? They're up a half a game right now. Am I correct?
Yes, they are. Two in the loss column.
Thank you. Two in the loss column. That's a big deal.
No, I agree with you. I think the Yankees are going to hold on and win this division. I think it's going to be a tight race throughout. But I think the Yankees are going to win the division.
Well, you're absolutely right. Evan, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Evan.
And wait, can I put one more thing in?
Go ahead.
Can we go to football?
All right, go ahead, real quick.
Oh, boy.
Real quick.
I mean, it's got to be about
Geno. Is it about Geno's jaw?
It's got to be about Geno's jaw.
Can you tell me why nobody in the locker room is backing up Geno?
Oh, that's a question. Honestly, that's telling right there about the type of player Geno Smith is. And not only the type of player, the type of person maybe Geno Smith is.
I said the same thing, Dan. And, Evan, that's a great point. Thank you for the call. We'll get to the Geno Smith thing in the second half of the show, believe me. But I'll say this. You're absolutely right. The fact that no Jet is coming
very
out saying
telling.
Geno didn't
very,
deserve
very
to be hit, it's ridiculous, shows you, one, a couple of things. One, the Jet players acknowledge Geno Smith's not very good. It's not that big of a loss when they lose their quote-unquote franchise quarterback. And the second thing is, how well-liked is Geno Smith in that locker room? If the story that was coming out yesterday was that players on the Jets were reaching out to IK and saying, hey, man, like, wish you the best of luck in Buffalo. If they love Geno Smith so much, why are you reaching out to one of your former teammates who punched out your team's starting quarterback?
That's a good point.
So I'm more on Geno Smith, believe me. Both of Dan and I are big Jet fans. If you're listening to the show, you know that. We'll touch on that in the second half of the program. Let's go out to another phone call we have on the line right here. Jake in Connecticut. Jake, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, boys?
What's up, Jake? How you doing?
I'm good, guys. So, how about these Yanks? They just swept last week in the home of Cup with two out of three big wins in Toronto. Jake, for the rest of the year, who's the X factor for this team?
The X factor for the Yankees. I'll say it's Tanaka, and I'll tell you why. Because we know what this offense is going to do. I don't think they're going to go through that cold streak like they were this past week in Cleveland and against the Red Sox and against Toronto when they got swept. They came out of it a little bit this weekend against a really good team, the Blue Jays. But I think it's Tanaka, because if Tanaka can pitch like an ace down the stretch, then you have kind of the CeCe Sabathia effect when he was with Milwaukee, a pitcher that can will you to a division title. And if Tanaka could pitch like he did this past week against a great lineup in the Jays, he gives the Yankees a chance every time out. That will stop the Yankees from going on any of these five-game losing streaks once again, and they'll put themselves in a position to win the division.
Yeah, you know what, Jake? It's a good question. I'm going to go with Michael Pineda. I think they need Pineda to come back and be a real top-of-the-rotation-like starter. I mean, they need him to pitch like he did in the first quarter of the season, really, when he was so dominant. People were talking about him as one of the best pitchers in the American League. They need him to be that good, because I think Tanaka's a given. You know, like Jake spoke about earlier, Tanaka's one of the best pitchers in the American League when he's healthy, and he is healthy right now, and he's pitching like it. I think they need to find that guy to go along with him. CC's pitched better of late.
Maybe it's Severino the way
maybe
he's close.
Maybe it's Severino, but I think they need Pineda to come back and be a top-of-the-rotation type pitcher, because I think if they could do that and they can match Tanaka, Pineda 1-2 and they're both pitching at their best, there's no reason why they won't be American League East champions at the end of the season.
All right, Jake, thanks for the phone call.
Thanks for the call, Jake.
We're going to take a quick break right now right here on Sports Talk 1240. Back with more of your phone calls, and we'll get into the football situation right after these words.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. Or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out. Or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip change, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB, Dan Butik alongside Jake Asman, the Asman and Butik Show. Spent the first half of the show talking about both first-place teams here in New York, the Mets and the Yankees. Mets with a four-and-a-half-game lead on Washington. The Yankees, after the loss today, a half-game lead on Toronto. Shifting gears, though, to two last-place teams, the Jets and the Giants. Jake, the Jets, oh my goodness gracious. Geno Smith punched in the jaw.
We were having such a great offseason.
Broken jaw, and the Jets were having such a great offseason.
They couldn't do anything
Revis,
wrong.
Cromartie, Gilchrist, Screen, Brandon Marshall, and it seemed like that the Jets...
Mikey Mack,
Todd Bowles, and it seemed like things were looking up for the Jets, and then Sheldon Richardson gets busted with marijuana, four-game suspension, then he's going 140 miles an hour, and who knows what's going to happen with that. And then Geno Smith is sucker punched in the jaw. He's out 6 to 10 weeks, and boy, that story really, I mean, still hard to grasp even a week later. Geno Smith punched in the jaw, and then today, after the surgery, throwing around the football with his friend. I mean, Geno Smith, man, come on, Geno! I mean, he's a mess. Really, it just questions Geno's leadership and really how badly he wants to be a quarterback. Listen, in the NFL. It's mind-boggling.
You're talking about the punch or him playing football today?
Well, the punch itself, just the fact that that whole situation unfolded the way it did, I think is a reflection on Geno Smith.
No, you're absolutely right. And listen, Geno Smith, if he wants to be a franchise quarterback in the NFL, you got to conduct yourself better. You can't put yourself in a situation to get punched out by one of your teammates. When I first heard this story, I thought it was a joke. It's comical.
I was on Twitter. And I was home. It was Tuesday, and I see, you know, oh, Todd Bowles is holding an emergency press conference, and I'm like, okay. And then the way he said it,
you thought Revis tore his ACL again.
He said it though was he sounded first like that. It was like a joke, not a joking matter, but it was like kind of playful. And then his voice really got serious, and then he's like, you know, Geno's going to miss 6 to 10 weeks with a broken jaw, and my jaw dropped. I mean, I was shocked that something like this could happen in an NFL locker room. Over $600.
And listen, you're Geno Smith. You're a starting quarterback in the NFL. I know you're not a very good one, but you're one of 32. How do you put yourself in this type of situation? And I don't need to rehash something that's been talked about over and over again, but, you know, as two Jet fans, Dan, it's mind-boggling what happens. And this doesn't kill the Jets. Ryan Fitzpatrick
of
might be just as good as Geno
Smith. But the fact that me and you are wasting our time talking about
it's just another story that puts the Jets in the news for all the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
And we want to change the circus, quote-unquote, atmosphere that's involved with this organization. These type of things can't happen with Sheldon Richardson. They can't happen with Geno Smith. And listen, Geno Smith, I don't think he's a great quarterback, but he was going to be given the chance to start this year and be an NFL quarterback on a team for years to come if he played well. And he blew that opportunity. He really did. Because if Fitz comes in now and plays good enough to put the Jets, let's say, 3-1 at the bye week or 2-2 even, I don't know if Geno Smith's getting his job back. With how good this defense is and Ryan Fitzpatrick can just be a game manager, this Jets team is good enough to maybe win 10 games.
Well,
Geno Smith might have had the higher ceiling, but they don't lose that much with Geno. It's just embarrassing that an NFL quarterback, a guy who says over and over again, Dan, that he wants to be a franchise quarterback, would even put himself in a situation to get punched out by a backup linebacker.
That's what bothers me, and that's really the big thing, is that, you know, again, we see these guys, and we think, and we assume, you know, fans assume that these guys are working as hard as they can, that they're putting the time in to the playbook, and they're studying, you know, on their off days, and they're going to all their meetings. But I just don't think, after what happened last year in San Diego, where Geno didn't show up to that meeting which he should have been benched for and wasn't, which was a joke, and then this whole situation with getting punched in the jaw and really, you know, putting himself over his football team. And I think that's very telling that he would, you know, I know he didn't expect to be punched, but why? I mean, this is a teammate. You know, the whole $600 dispute, it should have never happened. And then today, Geno Smith had surgery the other day on his jaw, out 6 to 10 weeks officially as of the other day. And here he is a couple days after his operation, he's throwing the football around with one of his friends.
And listen,
we find out today. What an idiot. He's throwing the football around with one of his friends.
No, you're absolutely right. But I'm not going to kill him over that situation alone, only because it's stupid.
It's just stupid.
It's just another example of Geno Smith, whether it's missing a meeting or yelling at a fan last year and getting a fine for that, or the situation when he was on the airplane 2 years ago. It's just another thing that adds up that makes me say, this guy is not going to be a franchise quarterback.
It makes you say, I really don't want this guy playing quarterback.
No, and
me.
I was at the Jets scrimmage where the Jet fans were booing him after he had the turnover in the green and white scrimmage at MetLife Stadium last week. And listen, as frustrating as it was to watch that, I wasn't going to boo this guy in a training camp practice.
Of course not, but you know how the fans are.
Of course, but I'm saying Jet fans have had enough, and it's hard to defend this guy when situations like this keep happening, because as Jet fan, I want to see Geno Smith do well. I want to see him turn out to be the next Joe Namath and be this team's first franchise quarterback in 40 years, but if you keep acting like this, that's not going to happen. And Geno Smith has lost the trust of this fan base a long time ago, and he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt when he's caught throwing the football around, or caught with quotes, whatever you want to say, when he's throwing the football around with his friend, and then you find out today that the Jets had to tell him to stop doing that because they didn't want him doing any physical activities. It's not a big deal, but it just adds to the laundry list of things
stupid.
That he's done that annoy you as a Jet fan.
It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense, and I agree with you to this point, Jake. When he comes back and he's eligible to return, where are the Jets going to be? It's not his job coming back. It's not like, well, Geno's back, let's give him the reins. If Drew Bledsoe couldn't get his job back, he was a franchise quarterback. If Drew Bledsoe couldn't get his job back, Geno Smith has no shot.
No, and it's very telling. I know Evan said this when we had Evan in Long Island on in the first part of the show when he brought up the Geno Smith situation too. It's very telling that none of these Jet teammates are saying, hey, he's our quarterback. He shouldn't have been in that situation.
I think they don't trust
him. He got sucker punched. Darrell Revis, he said it kind of bluntly. They're both responsible for this, and he's absolutely right. You're a franchise quarterback in the NFL. You would never see Peyton Manning get punched out. You'd never see Tom Brady get punched
out.
Eli Manning would never be in this situation. I mean, come on.
Well,
come on.
Well, the problem is...
Same old Jets.
This is why I question how bad Geno wants to be great. This is why. George in D.C. George, what's up?
Hey, guys. First time, long time.
George, what's on your mind?
Guys, just hang with me here. I got a conspiracy theory. What do you guys think about Rex Ryan paying IK to punch Geno in the face and then immediately the next day signing him to the Bills?
Well, I don't think that happened, but I do think I was very surprised that he got signed the next day by the Bills. I was really surprised that the next
surprise.
Day he got signed.
Typical Rex.
No, but I really did not think this guy would play in the NFL this year. I really didn't. I really did not think this guy would play
in
the NFL
this year.
Well,
I'll tell you what, Dan. There were two teams in the NFL that could have signed IK Emenapolit.
The
Bills?
And then the Pats.
Or the Patriots.
The Patriots.
And the Bills signed him.
Well, and the Bills signed him, and everyone's like, well, I wonder what Rex is. But if the Patriots signed him, he'd be in the hole. He'd be in Canton, Ohio in 2 years.
If the Patriots signed him, it'd be the greatest move in the history of football.
Well, and you know what's so funny? When the Patriots signed
Tebow.
The Jets signed Tebow for the same reason the Patriots did. But when the Jets signed him, it was a horrific move. And when the Patriots signed him, it's Belichick being a genius.
He's the greatest coach, football mind, in the history of football.
Well, I'll tell you what. I hope IK doesn't have a big impact on the Bills. I hope he doesn't play well against the Jets either.
How typical Jets would it be is when they do play the Bills.
When
he has
the game-winning
sack.
Or interception.
He strips Geno or something like that would happen.
Or he sacks you. walk-off safety. How about that? Zach Gino in the end zone for a walk-off safety?
You can't make this up. But, I mean, listen, I saw some stories out there that, oh, how dare Rex Ryan do this? If you know Rex Ryan, this shouldn't surprise you.
I was just caught up. I really did not think that he would be signed so quickly. I really didn't.
I mean, a day later?
A day later? And then he has a – of course, he has a press conference where he apologizes for the incident.
But he doesn't even apologize to Gino. He apologizes to the fans, the organization.
Well, I think
he never says, I apologize to Geno Smith for assaulting him. That's what he did. Geno Smith could file charges. He could press charges if he wants to.
And
he never said that.
Which was very telling about maybe what he thinks of Geno Smith. Because apparently no one likes Geno Smith. And that's the thing is, this whole incident was more, even though Geno got punched and broke his jaw, this situation was more telling about Geno Smith than IK. It was more telling about who Geno Smith is. Thanks for the call, George. Jake in Morristown. Jake, what's up? Jake in Morristown?
Yes.
What's going on? What's on your mind?
As the MLB season is coming to an end, I know since we're in the tri-state area, we're just talking about the AL East, but I want to talk about the second wild card spot where there's really five teams in contention, the Orioles, Angels, Rangers, Twins, and the Rays, being 2.5 games back from that final spot. So I wanted to ask you guys, who do you think is going to claim that second spot for the AL wild card?
Well, you bring up the Rays. Oh, man, I don't know if the Rays have enough hitting to really compete seriously. I know that's so tight for that second wild card spot. I mean, I can't count out the Angels. They're a really good team. They got Mike Trout. They've slumped over the last 2 weeks or so, but, you know, they could hop out of that pretty easily. I really don't think it's a five team. I know it's very close, but I think there's only two or three teams that can seriously contend for that spot. I don't think Tampa is a serious contender because I don't think their offense is good enough to compete. I mean, they're one of the worst offensive teams in the American League. I don't think they're going to be good enough to be there at the end of the year. I think they're going to fade out of this pretty quickly, just like they faded out of the divisional race. Remember, it looked like this was a two-team race for a long time between the Yankees and Rays, and what did the Rays do? They fizzled out. So I don't think Tampa is going to be in serious contention there.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. I think you realistically, you look at the AL wild card, and there's only a few teams that I think have a legitimate chance of getting it.
Like, even though it's all pretty tight, there's really you can't see the Rays making the playoffs.
No, I really can't. I think it's going to be Toronto is going to get in, and maybe even Baltimore with the way they're playing. They've won three straight games. The Angels are going to be in it to the end, but the Angels are also competing for the division right now with Houston. So one of those teams will probably get it.
Well, that's why you got to think Houston's going to make the playoffs in some capacity.
One of them is going to get it, either Houston or the Angels, you'd think. I mean, the Angels trail the division by 4.5 games, it looks like, right now. I think one of those teams is going to get in. I think Houston's definitely going to get in. If they don't win the division, I think they get in as a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now. I mean, Minnesota only a game and a half out of the wild card. I mean, they are 12 and a half.
But here's the thing with baseball. With
the
second wild card, Minnesota's only a game and a half out of the – Minnesota's one game over 500. It doesn't take that much, though, to get
into
the playoffs.
And the Tigers are under 500 by five games, and they're
only
4.5 out. I mean, so it's
– They're sellers, and they're only 4.5 games out.
And they're only 4.5 out. The White Sox, five games under 500, they're only 4.5 games out. I mean, Seattle's only 6 games out.
Which is nothing. The Blue Jays made up 8 games
in
7 days.
Do I think it's going to happen?
4 days.
I mean, you can't predict that happening, but I cannot see Tampa or Detroit or Chicago making the playoffs. I don't even think Minnesota is good enough to hop the Angels, Baltimore, or Toronto. So, I mean, I think when I really look at this race, I see Toronto, Baltimore, the Angels, and Texas as the teams that can seriously contend for that wild card.
Yeah, absolutely right. Jake, thanks for the phone call.
Thanks, no problem.
Appreciate the time. Switching back to football a little bit. Talk about the New York football Giants. A lot of injuries in the last couple weeks. They signed Merriweather today.
A lot of injuries.
Shows
how desperate they are at the safety
position.
They
bring in Brandon Merriweather today. I mean, they're very desperate at the safety position. And this is a position that has killed the Giants over the last two or three seasons, along with their offensive line. But they bring in Brandon Merriweather. And how is this going to shape their defense? How is this going to shape that defense that really wasn't very good last year? Especially for a team that prides themselves on rushing the passer. I mean, they didn't really do that great of a job last season, and the safety position was a huge hole when you talk about passing over the middle, guarding the tight end. A lot of injuries this year. Bring in Brandon Merriweather, two-time Pro Bowler. I don't know what kind of impact he's going to have, but I think the Giants are going to have a lot of issue this year on the defensive end.
The issues for the Giants is defensively. We expect this offense to be very good as long as the offensive line can hold up. We know what Odell Beckham could do. We know what Victor Cruz is going to do. Everything you hear about Victor Cruz is that he's having one of the most unbelievable comebacks from an injury ever, that they're eventually going to call this patella surgery that he had in his leg or wherever it was. the Victor Cruz surgery with how successful it's been is what I've heard people say that, multiple people say that. So you expect to get Victor Cruz back. He's going to play at some point during the preseason. The key for the Giants, though, is, as Dan, you were just saying, it's their defense. Are guys going to be able to hold up? Are guys going to be able to make plays and have better years than they did the previous year? And they brought back Spagnuolo to be their new defensive coordinator. So the question marks for the Giants, it's pretty simple. You expect the offense to be pretty good. Eli Manning should have a great year two in this Ben McAdoo offense. Is their defense going to be good enough to compete for this division? I think the Giants can compete for this division. I think Dallas should still be the favorites, rightfully so. You got Dallas, and I'd even put maybe the Eagles over the Giants right now, just because they did win 10 games last year. I know the quarterback, and they changed up.
Well, we really don't know what the heck's going on with the quarterback position.
But I'd still put the Eagles over the Giants until the Giants prove me otherwise. Well, the Giants have their work cut out for them. They got to get better defensively if they want to go to the playoffs as either a wild card or win the NFC East.
Well, when I look at the NFC East and I look at how complete these teams are, I mean, you talk about the Eagles, I think they're more of a complete team than the Giants are. When you talk about complete offense, defense, special teams. And obviously, with winning the division last year, I think Dallas is more of a complete team than the Giants are. And I think the Giants came into this offseason with a lot of specific needs. They've been hit by some injuries early on in camp. On the defensive side of the ball, that's going to be the huge question mark. And Jason Pierre-Paul, I mean, they were expecting him coming into this season before July 4th to be that dominant pass rusher that they thought they were getting, and that they thought he was going to be after that Super Bowl year. He's faded off a little bit. They were expecting a lot out of him
this
year.
That hurts their defense,
and
no doubt.
That really kills their defense. Among anything else, the safety play, the cornerback play, that is the big question mark. How is Jason Pierre-Paul going to play? How is he going to be able to adjust to only having four fingers on his hand? How is he going to be able to adjust?
What type of player is he going to be?
Again, I'm no expert on rushing the passer, but what I've heard from really everyone is that not having missing a finger changes the entire way you approach rushing the passer, as far as stance, as far as moves, and things like that.
Yeah, but he's not going to be ready for week one. When is he going to get back?
When is he going to get back? And what's his contract scenario?
And also,
that's still up in the air.
Also, not only that, Dan, what type of shape is this guy in?
If
the guy needs to play NFL football, he's not going to be able to lift weights.
He's not going to be in football shape.
Not going to be able to work out as you'd like to be. There's a difference between being in shape and being in NFL football shape. That's why the training camp's five weeks. You know, it takes time to build these guys up to be conditioned to play in the National Football League. And I know that Jason Pierre-Paul is a tremendous football player, but still, you're losing the finger. You're losing training camp. You're losing that conditioning. You're losing the game action you get in the preseason to get you ready for the regular season. What can we really expect from this guy? I wouldn't bang on a whole lot if I'm a Giant fan.
But that's very concerning, because you know what stinks about this situation with the finger is that it happened so late in the offseason. Obviously, July. If this happened, obviously, why would he be shooting out fireworks in March? But if for whatever reason this happened in March,
Easter fireworks,
or if this was Easter, or you know, this happened early March, late February after the Super Bowl, I think we're looking at it. Well, the Giants can fill the need elsewhere. Maybe do something in free agency. It happened July 4th.
Well, I mean, they don't have any cap space to go out and bring someone else in.
Well, at that point, yeah. But I'm saying when this happened on July 4th, I mean,
your roster's set at that point.
Your roster's set. I mean, you're, 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away from training camp? Your roster is pretty set. I mean, this was a really a huge shock to the Giants, and the way the whole situation was handled on Jason Pierre-Paul's side was very bizarre. You're not wanting to talk to anyone. No one really knew what was going on in South Florida with Jason Pierre-Paul for, what was it? It was like 10 days before people really had a word on him and if he was going to have his finger. And then we found out his finger was going to be taken off. But it's a huge question for the Giants, because the fact that this happened when it did, the fact that the Giants are not being able, really don't have the flexibility, didn't have the time to go out and make a move. I mean, they were relying on Jason Pierre-Paul to be that type of player rushing the passer this year, and they're still relying on him to be that type of player. And mind you, we don't know when he's going to come back. We don't know what his contract's going to look like, and we don't know when he's going to be ready to take a snap in an NFL regular season game.
No, you're absolutely right. And listen, the Giants' defense already had question marks even with Pierre-Paul, Dan. They lost Antrell Roll. They had two rookie safeties who now are both injured, and we don't know the status on them. Coughlin says they're day-to-day, but
what's day-to-day? I mean,
you're losing experience that you can get if you're a rookie in the NFL that you need training camp to get.
That's the thing. Say they're out 2 to 3 weeks. What, are you going to throw them into your third preseason game without taking a snap?
So you just throw them in there? I mean,
you can't do that.
It's tough.
You can't do that. I mean, the Giants are really facing huge offense, huge defensive issues that I think are going to plague them throughout the regular season. And it might be their Achilles heel coming down the stretch when you talk about them being a playoff team, because you know they're going to score points. But if their defense can't get off the field on second and on third down, I mean, it's going to be a long season for the Giants. It really is.
And the Giants, I want to look at their schedule right now, see where they start off. But they open against Dallas on opening night.
That's a tough game. I mean, you're getting the gauntlet right there.
You're facing your arch rival opening night, Sunday Night Football. They're the defending NFC East division champions. Then you got the Falcons, who should be an improved football team this year. They got the Redskins week three. Then they got the Bills in Buffalo week four. They got four very tough games.
They got a pretty tough schedule.
To start off their schedule. The Giants have a tough schedule in general. The Niners are their week five game. The Eagles week six. Cowboys week seven. Saints week eight in the Superdome. So that changes everything. You know, the Giants, they got a tough schedule right away. They can't afford to get off to a slow start like they have the previous seasons. They got to hit the season rolling.
Well, they certainly can't afford to go 0-6 like they did a couple years ago.
I don't think they will. Don't get me wrong. But, listen, this is an important year for the Giants, and we know how important it is for Tom Coughlin
and
Jerry Reese. Their jobs are on the line.
I mean, yeah. And this could be it for Coughlin and Reese if this doesn't work out this season and this team is 6-10 or 7-9 like they've been the last couple of years, just because of the fact that it's just – How much longer can you watch the same team every year? I mean, pretty much the same exact team results-wise every year.
Well, the question becomes, how long does Tom Coughlin's power, his reign, because he won the two Super Bowls, how long does that last? Came very close to ending that last year.
It's lasted a while.
They brought him back, rightfully so. I thought it was the right move bringing back Tom Coughlin. Now it's up to Tom Coughlin to get this Giants team to win, because this team right now has some their question marks on defense, but they should be able to score with some of the best teams in the NFL.
It's the defensive side of the ball that's going to be the Giants' big question mark. How are they going to get off the field on third down? How are they going to rush the passer? It's huge. It's absolutely huge. We're going to head to New Zealand. Josh is on the line. Josh,
how about
what's
that?
Up?
Josh in New Zealand.
What's
Josh.
Up, Josh?
Hey, guys.
Josh, you there?
Josh, you with us? Josh, on kind of a shoddy phone line. Josh, try to call back. We'll try to get you on the air.
It did sound like he was from New Zealand.
It did
though.
Sound like the long distance there from New Zealand. Josh, you with us?
Let's see. We're working on getting Josh right here. But how about that accent?
I calling all the way from New Zealand. Josh, New Zealand, what's up? Josh, going once, going twice. All right.
Hello?
Yeah, it must be tough for the phone lines in New Zealand.
Phone line in New Zealand. Josh, try to call back. We'll try to get you back on the air. But, going back to the Giants, they played the Jets late in the season. You look at the Dolphins.
Well, you know how that game's going to go.
Well, the Jets are going to lose that one. But Dolphins at Dolphins, home against Carolina. I wonder what that Eagles game is going to mean week 17.
Who knows?
Who knows? Maybe a wild card bid. And the Eagles are a whole other team. And what about Tim Tebow today?
Well, let's get to that right now. We'll touch on it.
Moving over to the rest of the NFL. Why don't we not talk about Tim Tebow?
You can't
back in an NFL uniform.
You can't talk about the NFL while talking about the Lord, the Savior, Tim Tebow. He does it all.
Well, the thing with Tim Tebow is, I'm shocked, honestly, first off, that he got a contract.
Did you see any of his preseason games?
I caught the highlights.
I had the honor of watching it at my job today. So
I caught the highlights.
I was watching
it on
Tebow time.
I was at the Met game today. So
yeah, what did you expect? I mean, Tim Tebow, he had a couple of nice plays. He has a touchdown
run. It's the same
run.
Wrinkle. It's the Tebow wrinkle that we've seen.
Didn't look like much change, and he's going up against third and fourth string linebackers and defensive players, so... I mean, take it with a grain of salt. He had like 69 yards and a touchdown, but he's competing with Matt Barkley for that third string spot. And listen, Tim Tebow, I don't know how good of an NFL quarterback he's ever going to be. And we knew this 2 years ago when he was with the Jets.
As long as he's on the roster,
he's going to be talked about.
He's going to be talked about, and he's going to be the guy that people want to speak to after the games. Win, lose, or draw, he's going to be the guy. The attention's going to be on Tim Tebow. And I think Chip Kelly knew that when he brought Tebow in the offseason, is that – Tebow's going to be the star. Barring who's the starting quarterback, Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez, whoever it is, Tim Tebow's going to be the real star of that team. And I think it worries me to have Tim Tebow there with a team with really the quarterback situation in question, because the fans are going to be calling – the Eagles fans are going to be calling for Tebow if things don't go right. They're not going to be calling – if Sanchez is starting and Bradford's the backup, they're going to be calling for Tebow.
We all want Tebow.
Well, I'm just saying that.
As a fan, I want to see it. I want to see Tebow now.
Mark
Sanchez was under center, there was hope that he could turn out to be the guy. We didn't want to see that as Jet fans, but now why not? Let's see Tim Tebow time in Philadelphia. I don't think it's going to happen. nor do I think Tim Tebow is going to make the roster. But listen, it'll be exciting when he's in there. I made watching week one of the preseason football today on a Sunday afternoon worthwhile just to watch Tim Tebow drop back and run around and not be a very good quarterback, but what else is new?
Well, I think the Tebow thing is, again, it's Tebow mania, and I think bringing in Tim Tebow.
But Mark Sanchez can't get a break. I mean, everywhere this guy goes,
Tebow away from him. And how funny is that? Is that Mark Sanchez thinks here he's competing with Sam Bradford for the starting job in Philadelphia, and who gets picked up? Tim Tebow.
He's right there.
And Tim Tebow's, if Mark Sanchez doesn't play well or Sam Bradford doesn't play well, I'm telling you, the fans are going to be calling for Tim Tebow because he's that type of attraction.
But I'll tell you what, Sam Bradford and Mark Sanchez will start all 16 games. Tim Tebow will not start a single game for the Eagles this year.
Or I don't think he's going to make the team.
I think he's going to get cut.
You mean
to tell me they're going to cut Barkley and keep Tim Tebow?
Well, no. I mean,
come on.
I think maybe Tebow was just brought in because I think Chip Kelly felt maybe he could add. Well, for the same reason why the Jets brought him in and I guess the Patriots brought him in.
But when the Jets do it, we already talked about this. Whoa, it's the worst thing ever.
Well, we
and
know.
It was. I hated the move at the time, too.
It was a horrendous
move. But it's just funny that when the Patriots did the exact same thing, it was hauled as the greatest move ever.
Well, even this year when the Eagles do it, it's not being talked about. He fits great into Chip's system. Well, let's see what happens because, again, I really can't see him making the team over Matt Barkley. There's no way they could cut Matt Barkley and keep Tim Tebow as a third-string quarterback. Otherwise, it's going to be mayhem after every game in the locker room. I'm telling you, if Tim Tebow's on this roster, the fans are going to be calling for him to play quarterback if things don't go right.
You really think so?
I really do.
When he was in New York, though, did that many people call for him? I mean,
I think enough did.
But there
I
were
think,
people that knew that he was a bad quarterback.
Well, I think people at this time, I think for a lot of that time, I think people still believed in Mark Sanchez for a certain degree, and then I think everything fell apart with Mark, but I'm telling you, I don't think the Eagles fans are in love with Bradford, and I don't think they're in love with Sanchez. I think if their quarterback plays really up in the air, I don't think the Eagles fans are necessarily happy with the way things Chip has handled the quarterback position.
They would both have to be horrible for them to even consider going to Tim Tebow.
Well,
I mean, he's probably not even going to make the team. We're talking about this if he's going to be on the roster.
Well, let's talk about this. Say he does make the team. Anyway, we only have 2 minutes left in the program, so we'll end on this. We have one call on the line. We'll try to get to it in a sec. But the thing is, take a look at this. Bradford starts. He gets hurt. He's very injury prone. Sanchez now comes in and plays bad. And Tebow's the third stringer. They're going to be calling for Tebow.
Well, that's a good scenario.
Because Bradford
gets hurt,
he's very injury prone.
Well, then it's the same situation with the Jets.
Well, that's the thing is, Bradford's very injury prone. So if he goes hurt, if he gets hurt, arm hurts, something like that. Sanchez comes in and plays like Mark Sanchez, which is not very good, as we've seen in his career, very inconsistent. They're going to be calling for Tim Tebow.
All right, real quick, our final caller of the night before we wrap up the show. Let's go out to Anthony on Long Island. Anthony, what's up?
Hey, guys. I want to say you're having a great show so far, but I want to touch on a quick point on the Yankees. I know September's coming up, and do you think the Yankees will call up either Aaron Judge or Rexner coming up in September?
I think they will probably call up because, you know, the rosters expand to 40. Why not? Get them a taste of a little pennant race late in the season. I think both guys are going to come up.
I agree. I think at the end of the day, the rosters are expanded. The Yankees didn't make their move at the trade deadline because they wanted to bring in these guys from September to help in the pennant race. But that's going to do it for us. You hear the music playing. That means it's time for us to get out of here. Dan, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you to WGBB and Robert Quall, the sports director, for giving us the opportunity to host shows all summer long. We had a great time, and we'll be back during our breaks at school.
Absolutely. We're back on WGBB. It was a lot of fun.
So long, everybody.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.